gentlemen, I need to make one phone call, and then we will move to, Mr. Johnson is going to conduct you here, but I need to make a phone call first, sir. Just hold on, I'll hang up on this, sir.
December 27th of 2011, sir. and you've been to this board numerous times, and these times that you come to before this board was for him for absolute discharge on the arrest of Reverend Perot, and you have been denied by this board each time. Looks like the last time you came for this board was in January 9th of 2018. Is that about your understanding, sir?
Yes, sir.
So according to the information that I have, prior to this offense that you were actually incarcerated for, you didn't have a prior criminal history?
Correct, sir.
Okay. Going over the offense, sir, and I'm going to ask you to tell me in your own words what happened, but this is an incident that occurred back in 1987 when Ms. Randolph was found deceased in her residence located at 7753. West Libby said that her hands were bound behind her with adhesive tape, and she had been stabbed a number of times with a long bladed knife resulting in her death. It says through the police interview, they interviewed you, advised you of your rights. They discovered some adhesive tape which appeared to be blood spots under the seat of your limousine that you drove. It says that you advised the police that you and an unidentified person had gone to the residence with the intention of taking jewelry and money, and you denied committing the offense and indicated that the other person had been the one inside the bedroom along with the victim. You were also the limo driver for this family. Is that right, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But the name was up. Patrice Ryder Rosa, sir.
Yes, sir.
That's the victim's name, sir.
Yes, sir. It says that through subsequent investigation, there was another subject. Mr. Richard Bush was arrested for also being involved in the murder of Richard. And according to Mr. Bush, when he was interviewed, he indicated that you contacted him about robbing Ms. Banderos, and that you, along with him, went over there, and he was saying that Mr. Banderos had hired someone to kill his wife, and Mr. You were to tie Patrice up and leave her there at the house for someone else to kill. But subsequent to that, you guys did go into the house, and there was a death. And you subsequently admitted to being involved in the offense. However, you said that you were under great pressure because you had broke up with your fiance, and she had taken your bank account, and you needed some money, and you didn't understand why you really went that far to killing Ms. Banderos, because you could have just asked him for it, and he probably would have helped you. Is that about right, or you want to tell me in your own words? So what was going on with you? What was going through your mind that created this incident that you were involved in, sir?
Right. All the information is correct, sir. At that particular time, I was going through some things with an ex, and she ended up cheating on me, and then liquidated all the funds that we had, and then I asked her to leave, and then she left, and I couldn't get caught up on bills. And as you stated, the only thing I did have to do was just ask for help, but I didn't, sir. I chose to commit the crime to help me financially.
Okay, so why did you decide to go over there? I mean, it's finally proves that they treated you like you were part of their family, according to the information that I have. So why did you decide to go over there, sir?
Well, I felt at the time that if I would, commit the murder, sir, that I would actually move back into the residence, because when we came here to Arizona, I stayed there with them.
So, you thought you...
I'm sorry, sir, I didn't hear you.
What do you mean you thought you'd move back into the residence? You thought that they would give you a residence, or what?
Oh, no, sir, with her being gone, sir, I was hoping that I would move back into the residence to where I didn't have to pay rent or bills or anything like that.
Uh-huh. So, I'm trying to understand, you went there to rob the residents. Why, what, explain to me, sir, what was going on in your mind, why she was actually murdered? Why did you have to stab her or murder her if you were just going to rob her?
Well, I just felt that at that particular time, sir, that was my best, I don't know how to say it, that would have been a better outcome if I would have, you know, I don't want to say kill her, but which I did, that would not be there, sir. I would have had a better chance of moving back into the house.
So, Mr. DeSosa, let me ask you another question, sir. So, when you went there, and in the report, it just says that I'm reading in the report, it says that you accused the other gentleman of actually committing the murder. Who was the one who actually stabbed the victim?
Oh, it was me, sir.
It was you? Okay.
But the information I gave, it wasn't true at all, sir. I have taken responsibility of that, sir.
Okay. So, sir, I do see a parole plan that's a release plan that was in your file from 2014. How come you didn't have any more recent information in your file about a release plan?
Well, sir, at this particular moment, things fell apart because I did have jobs available back in the past, but they're not available right now. Okay. And then I was told about the church on the street that I could go there first, and then there's a church here in Yuma who would love to have me be part of the church. So I'm just praying that I'll be able to go to church on the street first and then transfer here to Yuma, sir.
So what have you done or what's changed, sir, that has changed your attitude or your behavior? That what would you tell this boy to why you should be released on parole?
That man that committed this heinous crime almost 32 years ago does not exist anymore. I didn't have any goals and ambitions. Now I know who I am, sir. I have a strong relationship with Jesus Christ. I have learned how to, I had to forgive myself first and foremost, sir, because I was hurt in the past from just people, you know, with my stuttering problem, with being overweight. I had to sit down and actually forgive those people first. And then I had to realize that I am somebody just because I didn't want to have a good fulfilling life. I wasn't able to do this particular job or this particular organization because of color or because of my gender. And I realized I am somebody. And then with my growth and my fellowship with people, I come to realize it's like, okay, I am important. And I can move on.
Okay. Mr. DeSosa,
with my testimony, I can be able to help people before they get the handcuffs put on them. That's one of my main goals, sir.
Okay.
Is to serve.
Okay, so sir, how come you haven't taken any program in the last, since 2011, it looks like the last program you took?
Sir, I completed everything that Cheyenne Unit has.
Okay.
And then, plus I've been studying with my bachelor's degree, and I've been involved with the church and the music ministry here, sir. They have no new programs at this particular moment, sir.
Okay. So, and I didn't see any, do you have any community or family support that's been supporting you, or I didn't see anything in the file, sir?
I have my mother, Vivian, and my sister in New Orleans, and I have the church here in Yuma, sir. And there's a numerous amount of people who cannot speak on my behalf because it's DOC's policy that the volunteers who come within the unit are not allowed to speak on my behalf, sir. And I do have a support system.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying that none of that support system is indicated in your file, sir. I was just wanted to ask you about that. You know, the parole plan that I see that you have in your file is an old book. It's from 2014. So I wanted to ask you about that, sir, as we were going through some of that. I'm going to take some time right now, sir, to see if the board has any additional questions for you. Well, seeing no additional questions coming from the board, sir, I do have some victim advocates that are here to speak to the board. And I also have someone that's on the phone. So what I am going to do, we also have the county attorney that's actually here on this. So I'm going to ask the county attorney, how do you want to proceed with your victim after witnesses?
Would like to have the victims address the board first.
Okay.
And then I will address the board at the conclusion of after all the victims have spoken.
Okay. So we don't have any particular order. I'm going to leave it. I see that we have Ms. Laura Senko, Kathy Davis, Mr. Jim Senko, that are here, and from the county attorney, Mr. Elias, that's actually here too, and also on the phone, it looks like we have Mr. Andrew that's actually on the phone. So how would the family like to proceed with speaking to the board? Who would like to come up first?
Ms. Senko.
Okay, so if you would just come up and then present your name and go ahead and present the information that you'd like to present to the board, please.
Good morning.
Is that a green light on that mic?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Laura Ann Rosa Sango. Patricia Ann was my mom. We've been doing this for over 5 years now, and it just seems to be a repeat of everything. Every year is the same story on his end. And of course, you hear my end. We learn new things every year, depending on what you guys ask him. And if you listen, if you have all the details, this was definitely a premeditated murder. Sorry. 2 years ago, he admitted to premeditated murdering. He just does not deserve to be let back out into society after 30 plus years. He admits to all the details of the horrible crime. Last year, when I mentioned that my mom was stabbed over 30 times, he got extremely aggravated and said that that wasn't true. Him himself arguing with the board members over that fact. He argued with the board members last year about that DOC, that he's not allowed to have any people write letters for him, which he got very upset with also. He still shows that he's not in the right mind. My dad did employ him for over 2 years, and he decided to move out here with us. He was not working for my dad at the time, but my dad gave him money, $100 bills on a daily basis of whatever he needed. What you may or may not know is that after Jeff brutally murdered my mother, he sat with our family and cried. He went back into the house to get our animals. He mourned for us, mourned with us for 2 days or a day. We sent him home with my grandmother so my grandmother could lay down. And he sat there and listened to my grandmother bawl and cry, knowing that he was the one who did this. to our family. 30 years that he has spent in prison is nothing compared to the lifetime that we had without my mother, grandmother, and soon-to-be great-grandmother. She's no longer here. He doesn't deserve a second chance in life. He took that from my mother. I'm 17 years old, needing my mother, and he took her from us. The weird part about this is that my mother never lied to me. She knew who he really was. She knew. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Boyd, have any questions? Okay, thank you. Who would like to come up next?
Good morning. My name is Jim Sanko. I'm Laura Ann's husband. And first, I'd just like to thank you guys for the opportunity to speak today. Every year, we're forced to come here and listen to Mr. DeShazer describe the horrible acts that he did on May 19th, 1987. We have to hear how he brutally killed Patricia Bertarossa. At first, we were told that he stabbed her. Come to find out, he brutally stabbed her over and over again. And then just last year, or 2 years ago, I'm sorry, Jeffrey stated and admitted that this act was premeditated, that he went there with the intention to kill Ms. Bertarossa. Just last year, we heard how Ms. Bertarossa was pleading for her life while he was stabbing her. And how he killed her in hopes that Mr. Bertarossa will let him live in the family home again. Jeff always tells us how he found God, how much good he does in prison, and how much he deserves a second chance. Well, Ms. Bertarossa's three children, they don't get a second chance. They don't get the early morning phone calls. They don't get the words of encouragement. And why? Because Jeff murdered her. Patricia's six grandchildren will never have a chance to see what a great woman Patricia was. Her three great-grandchildren never get a chance to meet her. Why? Because Jeff murdered her. I ask the Lord to please take into account the brutality of this premeditated murder. Her family's lives will never be the same again. Thank you.
Thank you, Sergeant Boyd. Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Good morning. My name is Caitlin Davis Santa. Patricia Bertarossa would have been my grandma. Sorry. So, me and my sister were not yet born when Jeff murdered my grandma. To this day, we still see the detrimental effects that his crime has on my family and will continue to have. Every year we come here and we listen to his cold voice talk about how he murdered her. Over the last 6 years that I have been here and listened to him, we have not once heard any type of remorse in his voice when he describes what he has done. He snapped under stress back in 1987 when he was living with my grandparents, who gave him what he needed, what he wanted, and still couldn't live his life with the help that he has already received from them. They gave him money, they were helping him with a place to live right before then, and he still couldn't get on his feet afterwards. With how he reacted back then and how he snapped under that stress, how do you think he's going to react once he gets out into the world that has absolutely nothing to offer a cold-blooded murderer like him. He talks about how he found God when, in fact, it was my grandma who found God when he murdered her and he sent her up to heaven. None of us will ever get to meet her. Not me, my sister, my cousins. My sister is about to have her first child. He's never going to meet her. My cousins that are having their children, too, they don't get to meet her. He took someone from our lives that could have been really important and should have been here for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. What are the questions? Thank you, Ms. Davis. Anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? Okay, I'm going to go to Mr. Andrew, sir, on the phone.
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir, could you just state your full name and present any information that you'd like to present to the board at this time, sir?
I didn't hear the last part except my full name. My name is Andrew Barroso. I'm the eldest son of Patricia.
Okay, so would you go ahead, sir, and present any information that you'd like to present to the board, sir? Thank you.
Yes, well, I think if the board just listens to the previous speakers, I think they summed it all up. You know, first and foremost, what I'd like to say is just, you know, the bottom line is the brutality of the crime. You know, this wasn't a robbery gone bad, or this is, you know, a brutal crime. I had walked in not moments after it, but 3 hours after the time of death, and there's not a minute of every day in the last 35 years that I don't see them. Okay? I don't sleep at night. It was brutal. And he doesn't need to be let out at all. Okay, that's about all I have to say. I can't talk anymore. I'm sorry, yes.
Okay.
Jess, I swear to God, I hope he lets you out. In fact, I swear I hope he lets you out.
Mr. Verderosa?
Yeah.
Sir, I need you just to address the board, okay? Are you finished, sir?
I'm finished.
Okay, sir. I'm going to go at this time to the county attorney that's here, Mr. Elias. Did I say that right? Trying to make sure I got these names down. Right.
Yes, Mr. Johnson. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Matthew Elias. I'm a deputy county attorney with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. With regards to the parole request for Mr. Deshaies' award, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office did submit a letter for the board's consideration. I'm not going to go over the facts or any of the details that was in the prior letter submitted by the County Attorney's Office. Listening to Mr. Deshaies' award and the victims, what strikes me in this case is, number one, the brutality of the murder, the deep impact that it's had on the victim's family, the lengths at which Mr. Deshaies went to commit a premeditated murder against a woman and a family that had taken him in and had supported him and had helped him, and that is the way he treated those people. Those people that had supported him. The premeditated nature of this murder, the brutality of this murder, and also the deep selfishness that was at play when Mr. Deshaies committed this murder. For those reasons, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office requests this board deny any release or parole to Mr. Deshaies. Are there any questions?
Okay. So no questions coming for the board. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, Mr. DeSouza, the board is about to go into discussion, but we'll make a determination whether to deny or grant you parole. Sir, before we go into discussion, is there anything else you'd like to say to the board prior to the board going into discussion?
Sir, is there anything in my institutional record that will keep me from you know, receiving parole?
I don't quite know how to answer that question, sir. But if you have anything else you'd like to say to the board in reference to this hearing, sir, you're more than welcome to, without repeating yourself, and then we're going to go into discussion and we'll make a decision at that time, sir.
Yeah. No, I don't have anything to say, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir. So, Mr. DeSoja, the board's going to go into discussion, sir. While the board's in discussion, I'm going to ask you to stay on the phone so that you can hear the discussion taking place amongst the board. When we conclude our discussion, we will make a decision, and then I will get back with you with the results of the decision of the board, but you'll be able to hear the discussion taking place. The board's now going into discussion. This is a case Mr. DeSoja has been prior to this board. It's a little bit different. It was premeditated murder. He said that he went over there with the intent to murder the victim, resulted in her death, so that in hopes that he could stay at the residence there. He says that he was going through a situation at the time with his fiance or his ex that had financially drained him, but this family had taken him in, had supported him, and really been good to him. He had one time stayed in the house. According to the testimony we just heard from the family, the victim was stabbed over 30 times. Mr. DeSoja, while he was there for the first day or two, he actually went in and comforted the family and went home with the grandmother and stayed with them after he had committed this heinous act of the premeditated murder there. This wasn't an act where he was responding. This was a pre-planned act to simply go over there and murder the victim for his own financial gain and benefit others. I think that this was a crime, and although Mr. DeSoja has not had an extensive history of crime since he's been incarcerated, I am listening to him as I talk, and as I talk and listen to him during this particular hearing, I really don't really hear any remorse for his actions or what he actually did, and the fact that he did actually go out and premeditate and commit this murder and the way that he actually did it, that was planned, and stayed with the family and spent time with the family and tried to console them knowing that he had committed this murder. I don't see Mr. DeSoja being a good candidate to be paroled at this time. That's my opinion. However, I'm willing to listen to the rest of the colleagues. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I'll just follow up with saying that considering the cold-blooded nature of his crime, I find it disturbing that Mr. DeSoja presents as a victim and entitled to release. I don't hear remorse in his voice, and I think life imprisonment is a very real possibility in any 25-year-to-life sentence. Furthermore, I do not believe that behavior inside the Department of Corrections is a standalone justification for parole. Yes, we'll continue the discussion. Thank you.
Mr. Neal?
Yes, thank you, sir. One of the things that I guess you would say it troubles me, there's the release plan that he submitted, the basic idea of it is, is sound and sounds very good and everything, but it's 4 years old. And Church on the Street is usually pretty good about updating their acceptance of individuals as the paroles go along. In older crimes, every 6 months they come up and you see certifications, acceptance letters, different things like that. And the idea that people in the prison, whether volunteers or whether it be Church on the Street or somebody else in there can't or aren't allowed to write letters of recommendation. And we've heard that before, and we see them all the time. We even get corrections officers will send in letters on occasion. So there's no rule saying they can't do it. In fact, Mr. DeSajar's reasoning for not having anything current. So I just, without with the lack of remorse, excuses that really have no bearing or no merit, and I agree with Mr. Canonis. He seems to present as a victim and thinks that he's entitled to release. I just don't see him as a good candidate for parole or any type of release at this time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I also want to add in there that there is no family support or community support that's in the file. And although he's done some things, like you said, it's 2014 when this parole plan was actually put together, but since then I haven't seen anything, nor have I seen any program that he's actually taken during that period of time. But just wanted to say that before I finally go to Dr. Wright for any final comments.
Well, basically, mine is the same as it's been for several years with him. I think since 2014, I was not here when he initially came in 2012, but 2014, until now, I've heard nothing to change my mind. Therefore, I'm not in favor of releasing him at this time, sir.
Okay, therefore, I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. DeSocia absolute discharge, work of parole, or home arrest. I'm also going to ask for a 1 year sentence set off since it is eligible. This incident occurred in 1987. That will be my motion.
Second.
Agree. Motion by myself, second by Mr. Moore, agree, Mr. Condonis, Dr. Wright. This is going to be now 412A, 411 home arrest. I'm going to mark for 1 year set off. I'm going to mark the reasons for denial, that it was a serious and violent offense, that it was a loss of human life. I'm going to mark a serious and deep offense, that it was a victim was stabbed numerous times. I'm going to mark trauma to the victim too, because family stated that there's been previous hearing where it was alleged that the victim was pleading for her life during the time that this occurred. I'm going to mark a lack of programming, poor or no release plan, no family or community support. Is there anything else that the board thinks would be attached to that? Okay, thank you. Mr. DeSocia?
DeSajar.
DeSajar, Mr. DeSajar. The board has voted to deny your parole for absolute discharge, regular parole, or home arrest at this time, sir. That is going to conclude your hearing at this time. You will be eligible to come back before the board in about a year. The Department of Corrections will determine when you're able to come back before this board. So that is going to conclude your hearing at this time, Mr. DeSocia. I do want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity for appearing before this board. I want to thank all those who have came here to speak on behalf of the victim, as well as those who are on the phone. We're going to conclude this hearing at this time and be disconnected from the phone. Thank you. That's going to conclude the hearing at this time.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. I got to record that he did hang up on us.
Okay. And on the record, so that Mr. DeSocia did hang up as we were concluding the hearing.
Thank you.